Hello and welcome to the PSPA podcast. My name is Annalisa Kazari. I'm the PSPA's research coordinator. I will be hosting the second episode in series two of our podcast, now reframed to appeal to everyone affected by PSP and CBD. When reviewing the podcast, we asked some of our supporters what topics you would like to be discussed in different episodes. One of the topics you said you would like to be discussed was diagnosis of PSP and CBD. So today, in order to delve into this subject matter, I'm joined by Dr. Boyd Ghosh. Boyd is a consultant neurologist in Southampton and also a PSPA trustee. Welcome, Boyd, and would you like to say something about yourself?
Hello, Annalisa. So thank you for inviting me on this podcast. I'm a consultant neurologist, as you said, in Southampton, and together with some colleagues, Luke Massey and Jay Donnelly and others, I run a regional clinic for people with progressive supranuclear palsy, corticobasal degeneration, and a few other conditions such as multiple system atrophy and ataxia. And we have a catchment area of about 3 million. And so we see a large number of people with PSP and CBD. And our clinic tries to serve them as best it can through diagnosis, care, research, and support for them and their family as the disease progresses.
Thank you. That's amazing. Thank you for your hard work. And also, can I ask you, what is the diagnosis process in PSP and if there is a difference with the CBD?
Okay, so if I take PSP first, someone would come to my clinic, either a general clinic where I'm just seeing anybody, or my APS clinic where I'm seeing people with PSP or CBD. And I suppose the process starts by seeing them walk into the room, talking to them, no matter whether the carer thinks that they should be able to talk to me or give me a clear history or not, because it's about the process of how they can talk to me and interact with me. Care is a really important part of the diagnostic process. So they're there not only to support the person who's being diagnosed, but also to provide extra information and background information about how they were and how they are now. So I'll typically spend a bit of time taking a history, searching for the first time that something happened. So they fell 2 years ago, or they started having difficulty with their sight 3 years ago, something like that. And then try and build up a picture of how things have progressed going forward until they get to this point. By the time the history finishes, I'll have a fairly good idea of what I think. And that's, I guess, broken down into clearly PSP, clearly not PSP, or still not quite sure. And then I'll examine them. And I usually examine for the cardinal signs of PSP first. So I'll think about their eye movements. I'll think about how steady they are, which I've already probably assessed that come in through the door. And then I'll do a whole neuro exam just to make sure there's nothing else that I've missed. And often that's the bit that perhaps someone else might not do, but which has thrown up some difficulties where I can be less sure about the diagnosis after the examination because it's something that I wouldn't expect to be there. And then after I've done the examination and got this time course, this history, then I'll have a fairly good idea. And again, I'll either think that they've definitely got PSP, which means I've given the diagnosis. They definitely haven't got PSP, or at least as far as I can tell, they don't have PSP, or they're not sure. And the things that may help me to be more sure about whether they have a diagnosis of PSP or not is whether they have difficulty with their eye movements. So in PSP, people have slow saccades. So their fast eye movements, those saccades are fast eye movements, which we all have, in which you look around the room very quickly just to scan your surroundings. And those eye movements usually move around 250 meters per second, so you can see them start and stop, but not really much in the middle. And if people have got slow eye movements or they can't move their eyes up or down very much at all, then that's fairly clear that that's a warning sign for PSP. And in conjunction with that, if they're also unstable and have been falling over for a couple of years, then that's a fairly clear diagnosis, and you can be sure of that diagnosis pathologically around 95% of the time. However, they might not have eye signs, and they might just be unsteady and a bit slow. And the history might be quite short. It might only be 6 months. And they might look very similar to someone with Parkinson's disease. And so all of that means that you can't really easily differentiate someone with PSP from Parkinson's disease early until you get some signs which are very unusual for Parkinson's disease. And often I say to people when I'm trying to tell people how to diagnose PSP, well, they don't need to know about PSP. What they need to know is they need to know about Parkinson's disease. And once people develop things that aren't Parkinson's disease, then they can say, well, this is what I expect. I need to send you to someone else. So that's some of the reasons why it's hard to diagnose PSP, because you need to wait for there to be clear difference between people with some other Parkinsonian syndrome and PSP, and ideally some clear signs that would point you towards PSP. With CBD, it's quite different. They don't have eye signs, and they don't tend to boil over quite as much as people with PSP. But what they do have is they have often a hand, but it could be a leg, which doesn't move as they expect it to. It doesn't obey commands. It seems to do things on its own. And so the examination is a bit more important there. So if they have apraxia, by which I mean that they can move their hand and they can feel their hand, but they can't get it to do useful tasks like brush their teeth with a toothbrush or comb their hair, then that suggests that it's something called apraxia, which is something that a function that resides in the very edges of the brain called the cortex. And that's quite a characteristic feature of corticobasal degeneration. People can also have visual problems or language problems, which are subtle, but which are nonetheless present. So if you spot those, then that's useful. However, it can also be difficult because in Parkinson's, people often do get problems moving one hand or another. And so what you really want to know is after you've seen them, you want to give them a really good course of dopamine. If they get better, as sometimes people do, then that's not corticobasal degeneration, that's Parkinson's. But that trial of dopamine can take 3 months, 4 months, depending on how high you need to get the dosage. And then you need to see them back in clinic. So that's why corticobasal degeneration is difficult. It, in some ways, it more closely mirrors people with Parkinson's disease. Of course, with all of these diseases, as time progresses in the disease, it becomes clearer and clearer that this is not Parkinson's disease and this is something else. And once you've got to that point, then it's a more straightforward matter of trying to work out what other disease it might be. So a diagnosis is much harder early on in the disease than it is later.
Recently, host a symposium, and a person that worked with you on a study looking at the practice in UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, US, and Japan actually told us that there is a delay in diagnosis, often because there is a low index of suspicion by professionals and the overlap in symptoms. And this is exactly what you just mentioned. That is quite difficult to differentiate, right? Because symptoms can be from one disease or another. And to be in the middle is not the right place to be. But also we know from another study that was presented in the symposium, the delay is sometime around 3.3 years for PSP and 2.6 years for CBS to be diagnosed. Is this something that your patients experience as well, or you actually created a way to decrease that kind of delay?
So if we take the second point first, 3.3 years is probably related to the eye signs in PSP. So in order to be fully sure that this is PSP, you really want to see slow saccades or reduced saccades, so they don't move as far as you think they should. And usually those signs come about 2 or 3 years into the disease. And if they come earlier, then it's much easier to make that diagnosis because you have something which you can really pin the diagnosis on and be sure. Because it's not a diagnosis that you want to give lightly. For CBD, it's slightly shorter, but that's because really you're giving someone dopamine and you're seeing if it makes any difference. And if it doesn't, then it's much clearer that this is CBD or something else. And the reason why people can't move their hand is not because it's slow and Parkinsonian, but because it's apraxic, so it relies on that part of the brain. to control it. And so that's a very different sign. If a patient comes to a doctor at the beginning and says, I can't move my hand, and they get to the point where they examine it in that particular way, then that would be a clear sign to say, well, you know, this does look a bit odd. I'll give you some dopamine, but within 3 months, I can probably make the diagnosis. The difficulty, I think, what Yassine was saying about low index of suspicion is that all of us see things as we want to see them. So, for example, people with motor neuron disease have frontotemporal dementia, and this is now well recognized. But people have been having motor neuron disease for years, and the mantra amongst people was that there was no dementia in motor neuron disease. And so because that was the mantra, that was what was in the textbooks, people didn't see the dementia, and they thought, oh, maybe this is another disease. And it takes some time to recognize things that you are plainly obvious, but which you just don't come to recognize because you're not thinking about it. What often happens in clinical practice, so give you an example of a general neurology clinic, often people get half an hour to see a new patient and 15 minutes to see a follow-up. So by the time someone's walked into the door, walked out, and you dictated, that's probably about 8 or 9 minutes. And then you've got six or seven minutes left to actually examine them. Someone walks in with a label of Parkinson's disease, then you'll see what you expect to see. I can't move very well. I'm falling over. I'm speaking a little bit more slowly. And so those are all things that you might expect in Parkinson's disease and you might expect in PSP. It's only when someone flags or you ask something that flags that this is not what I expect for Parkinson's disease. This is something different. And then you might say, okay, I need to examine you more carefully because this isn't what I'd expect. And so it's about trying to ask people just to really carefully think about how is this person progressing as Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease or whatever the other misdiagnosis was. And is it happening as I would expect it to? And if it's not, then think about something else.
Thank you. And so how do you think we can make it easier? Like how diagnosis can be improved in the future?
So at the moment, all diagnosis is clinical. And so that's really, that's interesting for clinicians, and but it's challenging for patients, it's challenging for family, it's challenging for the clinicians. To some extent, because what you're in other disease processes, for example, a heart attack, you can do a test which shows it was a narrowing of the artery providing blood to the heart. So you can point to something and say, this is the problem. In PSP, the family and the patient comes in, they see someone like me, I say you've got PSP, they have no way of knowing if you've got it right or wrong, and they have to trust the doctor. And the vast majority of people do, but it would be much easier for us and we could push the diagnosis much earlier if we could get a test that would categorically say this is PSP. So there are lots of different ways that we might do that. So there is MRI imaging, which can look for signs of PSP. Now, it's not 100%. So you can't look on an MRI scan and say, this is definitely a PSP because it's got this. It's not like a brain tumor or a stroke. But there are signs that you might expect. And more importantly, there are things that if they're not there, you might think carefully about whether you want to make a diagnosis of PSP. So some of the shrinkage of the brainstem. And there are automated and computer-controlled and AI packages that might help us with some aspects of that, particularly the more complex aspects of looking at MRI scans and PET scans and other imaging. There are various cognitive and other clinical tests that we can put into the mix. And part of that might be, for example, the carer saying that this is what I've found, this is what I've noticed. Does that help you with the diagnostic process? And that's definitely an important part of the whole process. And like I said, it's really important that the carer is there on the first consultation to help me with that diagnostic process. And then there are things like blood tests, spinal fluid tests, saliva tests, that most of them are all in research at the moment. There are pretty good tests now for Alzheimer's disease in terms of lumbar punctures. So we can look for some aspect of amyloid beta, which is one of the proteins that's deranged in Alzheimer's disease, and tau, which is one of the proteins in Alzheimer's, but also in PSP. And that can help us a little bit to say, well, this is actually Alzheimer's disease, so therefore I don't think it's likely to be PSP or CDD. But we need more markers like that. There is lots of research around the world looking for spinal fluid markers and also blood markers and saliva markers and other markers to say this looks like it's PSP. One of those areas is something called seed amplification assays, and that's where the protein that causes the problem in PSP and CBD is called tau, and an abnormal protein spreads to an area of normal protein, and because it's an abnormal shape, it changes the shape of the normal protein, and that normal protein can therefore become pathological and an abnormal shape, and then it in turn spreads to other areas of normal protein and spreads the disease. And so we can do that in a test tube, and we can look at that. And there's lots of interest around the world about trying to operationalize that test to see if that will give us more information about, is this a tauopathy, something that's caused by a tau protein abnormality, and therefore, does that make it more likely that it's PSP or CBD than, for example, Parkinson's, which is an alpha synucleinopathy. It's a different protein that causes Parkinson's Parkinson's disease.
Thank you. It sounds complicated, well, complex, actually. And also, I guess all this work actually needs time. And so sometimes the delayed diagnosis is also linked to the time of having all these assessments. And this is something, again, that was clearly stated at the symposium.
So maybe the MRI scan is a clinical test, but all the other tests largely that I described are research tests. So they wouldn't be carried out for most people in a clinical scenario. They'd have an MRI scan to make sure they don't have a brain tumour or other abnormality like a stroke, but they probably wouldn't have these other tests because they're all research.
And so after we got the diagnosis, what support should clinical service offer to patients and their carers?
So one of the things that we could do is, I think the most important thing is a diagnosis. So having a clear diagnosis is helpful. And there's obviously lots of effort being put into trying to find a treatment, and that's drug companies and other academics. But on a very practical level, it's unlikely that a drug treatment is going to reverse the disease to the point where they were well 3 or 4 years ago. And so we need to think about how we care for people with PSP and CBD and how we support them and their family. So that might be providing evidence that physiotherapy is useful, perhaps, if it is, and occupational therapy, speech language therapy, dietitians, what environment is helpful, should they be moving more, moving less, what age should they have, should they have clinical coordinators, so helping them navigate their pathway through the system, providing help when they need it most, rather than coming into hospital and seeing people that don't know them in a rather anonymous and busy environment. One of the things that has helped in the past for motor neuron disease is that they established NICE guidelines. And NICE guidelines are the guidelines that the government, essentially, or the NHS governing bodies, produce for the NHS to follow, or at least have a good reason not to follow. And so in that way, they're kind of binding or statutory. And in MND, the NICE guidelines suggested that there should be a multidisciplinary team clinic with multiple people involved, and there should be some thoughts about a coordinator. And because of that, lots of trusts around the country, either whether specialist MND centres or not, thought about how they would operate with that system in mind and instituted some degree of multidisciplinary team working. I think there are no NICE guidelines for PSP or CBD, and what's more concerning is that NICE will need research and objective evidence to say that there is benefit or not for various strategies when we're dealing with people with PSP and CBD, and there isn't that research either. And so the pathway to getting that those NICE guidelines is really building up the research base as quickly as we can to say what is useful and what is not useful, and then lobbying government or NICE to say, look, actually, we've got some research base now. We'd really like to have a look and see if there are NICE guidelines that we could use. That's one pathway. There are lots of other non-statutory guidelines out there, but trusts don't have to take any notice of those. The other way that you could do it is by proving that PSP and CBD are similar in some way to motor neuron disease such that they should be included in those guidelines for other diseases. But that's a difficult thing to do because they have a different pathology, they have a different time course, and care is fractionated across different clinicians.
Yes. And just for our listener, can you tell us what is NICE?
So, very good. So, NICE is the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence, and it's the body that determines guidelines for all kinds of treatments in the NHS and helps the NHS to find its way through the minefield of different possible treatments to find the most effective and useful.
Thank you so much for joining us for this podcast, Boyd, and in helping us to better understand the diagnosis of PSP and CBD and challenges they are faced during this process. So I hope our listeners have enjoyed this episode. And if you have any questions, you listeners, about your own diagnosis, please consult your neurologist in the first instance. Our helpline is also available to chat, and you can call at 03-000-110-122 or by email, and you can use this address, helpline@pspassociation.org.uk. Thank you again. Thank you.